I'm feeling better today than I have in a long time. By all rights, I should be jet-lagged, and I feel pretty good.
Alaska senators are upbeat about a potential debt ceiling deal. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, July 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the public weighs in on cutting government waste in Alaska.
I hope you people are serious and wanting to know how to save money.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Congress took a step forward in its negotiations over a debt ceiling plan today, which is noteworthy in a month of grinding gridlock. Both of Alaska's senators are encouraged by the proposal by a group of three Democrats and three Republicans, calling itself the Gang of Six. One of the Senate's most conservative members, Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, just rejoined the gang after dropping out 2 months ago, and President Obama is urging that it get some consideration. APRN Libby Casey reports from the Capitol.
Senator Lisa Murkowski left a Republican lunch meeting with one word about how she's feeling: invigorated. She says even though the Gang of Six plan is far from a done deal, this moment is more promising than what she's seen.
I'm feeling better today than I have in a long time. By all rights, I should be jet-lagged, and I feel pretty good.
Murkowski has warned that not raising the debt ceiling by the August 2nd deadline could be catastrophic to financial markets and leave the U.S. without enough money to make Social Security payments or send out paychecks to the military. The Gang of Six plan would cut the deficit by $3.7 trillion over a decade. Murkowski says the big question is if the details can be hammered out and agreed upon by Congress in the 2 weeks left until the U.S. risks defaulting.
We've got a looming deadline in front of us. Here in the Senate, we seem to operate best when we've got time constraints. So we've got the time constraints. We've got the ideas out on the table. Let's get it done.
Both Murkowski and Senator Mark Begich attended a briefing Tuesday morning outlining the Gang of Six plan. Members of both parties left the meeting showing enthusiasm that has not been seen in the Capitol in weeks. Senator Begich says while he prefers a plan that he helped craft, put forth by North Dakota Senator Kent Conrad, he's willing to move forward.
There's elements I like, there's some elements I don't like, just as in the Conrad budget. I think at the end of the day, is there a melding of these to get us to a final budget deal? Yes. Problem is, people have to get serious around here and actually do it.
While Alaska's senators are in a flurry of meetings this week, Congressman Don Young is not in Washington. He's in Alaska, attending a fishing trip fundraiser for a charity named for his late wife, Lou Young. It benefits Alaska Native families battling cancer. Neither Senator Murkowski nor Begich would weigh in on whether Young should be in Washington, but Murkowski said she's focused on hunkering down and having a voice in the debt debate.
There's a lot that comes about in this place by critical mass, and even though I might not be attending the White House meetings, there is something that each and every one of us can be doing in terms of giving support, encouragement, asking the questions, pushing and prodding, and we all need to be here.
Murkowski points to the little-known role the Senate women may have played. She says last week, both Republicans and Democrats called on the Gang of Six members to brief them on their progress. The group of 15 women were opinionated, asked questions, and proved to be a good sounding board, according to Murkowski.
I have to wonder if the group of women senators had not gotten together last week and said, we got to kickstart this thing. If we hadn't gone and asked for that briefing, would they have come forward and said, okay, maybe it is time to put this out.
Senator Mark Begich agrees that it's not just taking crucial votes, although that's big on his priority list. It's also the process of talking with colleagues, hammering out the fine details, and putting heat on leadership not to waste any more time.
Each person has to make their own decisions of what their priorities are. I would love to be back there with him, but as a member of a budget committee and someone who sits in leadership trying to craft some of this result, I have a responsibility to be here. Despite the fact tomorrow's my anniversary and my son's birthday is in 6 days, I'd have a rather priority to be there, but this we got to get done.
Senator Murkowski says she'd also like to be up in Alaska, but is prepared to stay in the Capitol.
I think where we are right now is as critical as any time that I've been here. I want to go back home this weekend because it's the weekend that we're all going to be honoring Ted Stevens. There's probably nothing that I could do that would honor Ted Stevens more than making sure that the needs of our country are attended to. I think Ted would understand why I'm not in Alaska this weekend. If we need to be here, we need to be here. So,
Senate and House leadership are calling for members to work through this coming weekend. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Alaska has more money in savings than any other state in the country, about $15 billion. But the state is still looking for ways to trim costs and eliminate waste. State lawmakers took testimony today in Anchorage from government officials and the public on ways to do that. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Mark Lucan isn't a household name in Alaska, but the department he runs, Transportation and Public Facilities, is huge. It includes 3,500 employees and an equipment fleet of 7,000 vehicles. All of those engines burn through a lot of gas, but Lucan says they wouldn't have to burn as much if they spent less time idling.
If a car has been idling for more than a car or truck has been idling for more than 10 minutes, well, that means it's either unattended or, they're just not moving. Let's turn it off.
Lucan thinks his department could save 10% in fuel costs by making that simple change. He points out it would be better for the environment, too. The department estimates savings in the hundreds of thousands of dollars and is already implementing the change. It's the type of idea Senator Bill Willikowski, a Democrat, was looking for when he organized the Anchorage hearing.
We have an operating budget that keeps growing, and it's quite simply, it's unsustainable. And so we're figuring out how to keep our revenue stream going and yet how to make government more efficient and effective to serve the people of Alaska.
Willikowski and other lawmakers heard ideas from four state commissioners. The Department of Revenue is looking at making more financial investing decisions in-house rather than paying expensive outside advisors. Another recommendation was to have boards and commissions meet by video conference instead of in-person, saving travel expenses. But not all of the ideas were about trimming costs. The Revenue Department argued for budgeting more money for hiring qualified oil tax auditors. Willikowski agreed.
Some instances where you need to spend more to make more. And I think that's one where the state of Alaska relies on oil and gas revenues for 90% of our state revenues. And the problem that you have is you have auditors who are working only for short periods of time or who are maybe not as qualified as we would like. And so if we need to attract better and more qualified auditors, it will ultimately make us money in the long run.
The commissioners had a lot of ideas for finding efficiencies in their departments or raising more revenue, but Willikowski points out they weren't as willing to find savings by cutting jobs or divisions.
I think we saw a little bit of reluctance from commissioners today to talk about cuts in their administration.
After the commissioners finished their testimony, the public was invited to weigh in. Only a handful of people called or showed up in person to offer their ideas. Anchorage resident Jerry Levine wanted lawmakers to consider privatizing more government services to save money on pension plans.
And we're taking those public employees off of the public payroll and putting them into the private sector. We're not losing jobs, we're just transferring the jobs away from the government, putting them into the private sector. It makes more sense, total more sense.
And John Spaulding thought lawmakers and other government officials should think about moving their offices in Anchorage to the former Kulis Air National Guard base land, out by the airport.
My recommendation is forget about buying that property downtown, which is expensive as the devil. Sell that building that you're in now and find a place where the public can drive and don't have to pay to park to come in and talk with you folks. And that would save the state a whole heck of a lot of money.
Wilikowski is accepting more ideas at the website savealaska.aksenate.org. He plans to put together a list of all the ideas before the next legislative session, and he hopes some of them actually make it into law. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
A spokesman for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation says BP Exploration Alaska plans to complete cleanup of a spill at the Lisburn Production Facility drill site on Alaska's North Slope before digging up the pipe that burst and caused it. Tom DeRider says the cleanup should be completed before the ground freezes later this year. A spill of methanol, water, and crude oil estimated at 2,100 to 4,200 gallons occurred early Saturday. The liquids were released onto a gravel pad and into a tundra pond as crews tested newly installed valves by pressurizing a section of pipe that crosses beneath a road. A statement from BP says the spill was detected immediately. The company says hydrostatic pressure testing is a common method for integrity testing. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a TV program alleges sea monsters in Bristol Bay.
Right there, see that? Yeah. This is what soul means. When I saw the head come up, and I saw it blow out from behind his head.
Right there.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How do you get men to wear their life jacket when the fact is that 90% of boating-related fatalities in Alaska are men? Well, truthfully, most men won't listen to messages like this, but they might listen to you. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card and make a promise to wear their life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Get a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back alive. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
John Baker, Martin Boozer, and Jeff King may have to look elsewhere for their January Iditarod training. The Bethel-based Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race may be a thing of the past. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning-Bards has more.
It's an event that has brought the biggest mushing names in the world to remote Bethel, Alaska for the last 32 years. But the race committee says there will not be a race in 2012 unless a race manager can be found soon. It's been a few months since the race committee started looking for a permanent replacement for former manager Casey Stockdale, who moved on to another job. And besides some temporary help, no one has stepped up to take the reins. In a meeting on Friday, the race committee called the situation a crisis.
We don't have any options, really, in terms of trying to put the race on without a manager.
Longtime race chairman Myron Angstman. He says although they rely on more than 100 volunteers every year, the manager is vital.
We are, for the most part, kind of out of business, you know, you might say, because even if somebody came along now, it would be nip and tuck if we could get them up to speed, because the things that need to happen, payroll and tax payments and all those kind of things, are not things that just everybody knows how to do.
That includes oversight of the organization's state nonprofit gaming permit. Angstman says filling the position isn't a new problem, the committee's noticed. He says the last few times they've looked for a new manager, they received just a couple of applicants. Angstman says the job is definitely not for everyone. There's a fair amount of stress that comes with the position, especially in January.
We depend on our manager to put on a major sporting event with volunteer help. And that's a high responsibility.
And the pay could be a factor, too. The job pays a part-time salary of $40,000. Although most of the work is in the winter, there are minor day-to-day tasks year-round. Angstman says there's no health insurance or retirement plan, but the manager does get a truck, a snow machine, a cell phone, and internet.
We've always considered our race manager to be a person who has stepped forward, and there's a sort of an element of volunteerism in it, helping out our race to go forward. And that's the kind of person we're looking for.
In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
It's the heart of the tourist season, but for one tiny Alaska community, it's not happening again. Eagle, the gold rush city on the Alaska-Canada border, is in its second summer of a tourism drought. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Yukon River community of Eagle only has about 100 residents, but it's been a popular stopover for thousands of Holland America cruise passengers who come to share its historic charm. That wasn't until last summer when heavy rains caused slides and washouts that closed sections of the only road into town, the Taylor Highway. It reopened last fall, but Linda Houston, director of Alaska Yukon Land Excursions for Holland America, says the company has held off on coming back.
Safety trumps everything in our business, so and our guests have been very understanding. Certainly in 2012, we have marketed and planned to go back to the Eagle Run. So our hope is to return to business as usual when it's safe to do so.
Holland America also isn't running its catamaran tour boat, the Yukon Queen, to Eagle. The combination means the loss of up to 200 visitors a day. Eagle Historical Society Museum Director Donna Westfall says Holland America was the primary conduit for visitors.
They would bring people on the boat and people on the buses, and then they would switch places when they got to town. And while they were in Eagle, they would take tours and spend money at the gift shop and at the local little mall here with the ladies who did crafts. And so it was a pretty good arrangement.
Westfall says the loss has devastated museum income, eliminated tour guide jobs for local teens, and hurt vendors of provisions and fuel. Betty Borg with the Eagle Crafts Mall says Holland America's pullout has shut down the small operation.
There are three or four of us that sat up across the street from the museum, and we sell jewelry and knitted items. So without the buses and the boat coming in, we basically have no sales.
Longtime local silver and goldsmiths Ron and Mary Morris used to derive three-quarters of their income from selling handmade jewelry to tourists. Mary Morris says business has dried up.
I can relate to a lot of the people I hear about. In the rest of the country, we feel virtually unemployed. We continue to make stuff, but we have very few customers coming in.
The Morrises and other tourism-dependent Eagle residents are hoping Holland America comes back. The company's Houston says she understands the impact of their absence.
We know that we have a fairly important role in that community, so it's disappointing to not be there for a number of reasons, but certainly for the community.
Houston says that could be later this summer or next year, depending on the Taylor Highway, where there were additional slides and washouts earlier this summer, and the state has worked to keep the road open. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Friends and colleagues are responding to the death of a North Dakota state legislator after a Kenai Peninsula Highway rollover crash. The accident happened around noon yesterday, and it closed down a section of the Sterling Highway for part of the day. KDLL's Ben Stanton reports.
According to the Alaska State Troopers, Stenjam was driving an SUV north toward Soldotna on the Sterling Highway, and at a point between Soldotna and Kasilof, the vehicle crossed the center line and went off the road into the left side ditch where it rolled several times, came to rest upside down in a driveway. Trooper spokesperson Megan Peters says although she has not seen photos of the vehicle after the crash,
anytime a vehicle rolls, the vehicle is not in pretty shape. And unfortunately, the adult passengers and the adult driver in the vehicle were not wearing their seat belts. So I believe all three of them were ejected or partially ejected from the vehicle. The only person inside the vehicle wearing their seat belt was an 11-year-old child. And it seems that he was relatively uninjured.
Also in the vehicle was Stenjam's son, 34-year-old Robert Stenjam, and grandson, 11-year-old Daniel Stenjam, both from Bismarck, and another passenger, 34-year-old Keith Johnson from Hinckley, Minnesota. Stenjam's grandson was treated at the hospital with minor injuries, but Stenjam Jr. and Johnson received more serious injuries. The cause of the crash is unknown. Peters says it's under investigation.
Fatalities to do autopsies and toxicologies on them. We don't have any indication that the highway conditions were adverse. I mean, there's a possibility that it could have been something medical. There's a possibility he could have fallen asleep at the wheel. Potentially, he might have drifted off without realizing it. I mean, we don't know yet.
Peter says alcohol does not appear to be a factor. Apparently, Stenjam was visiting a brother and son who both live in Alaska, and the crash happened as they were returning from a halibut charter outing out of Homer. Alaska State Senate President Gary Stevens made a statement Tuesday sending condolences to the Stenjam family. Stevens says Stenjam had personal and professional ties to Alaska, and he will be dearly missed. In Kenai, I'm Ben Stanton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the Doyon family of companies working together to build Alaska's future.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again is making the best decision for herself and her baby. The mother has a better chance of regaining health and energy between pregnancies, and her baby has a better chance of being born on time and at a good weight. Talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Bristol Bay Online is a website created by the Bristol Bay Native Corporation to preserve the native place names of Southwest Alaska. The website has been in the beta testing stage for years, but this spring it went live. All 19 Alaska Native languages are considered endangered. The Southwest Alaska languages have more speakers than others, but linguists say the site is an important step toward ensuring they stay alive. KDLG's Daisha Eaton has the story.
The Bristol Bay region is home to three cultures, and that's the Yupik, the Aleutic, and the Dena'ina.
That's Francisca Demoski, a natural resource specialist with the Bristol Bay Native Corporation. In 2004, Demoski began collecting and recording native place names and developing a website called Bristol Bay Online.
The project uses a combination of internet and geographic information system technology. GIS is a method of graphically illustrating large data sets through digital map images and data tables. So internet viewers will be able to view these maps with the native place names on them.
Misha Alana is a GIS specialist with Bristol Industries. He helped design the GIS maps on the site.
Well, when the user gets to the homepage, there'll be a button to launch. So once they zoom into an area and see something of interest in the region, they should just click on that dot to see what it is.
Okay, so what's the pink and what's the
I think
the guard?
You click on a dot and let's see what happens.
Molly Chifluk is a Yupik elder who's been working to keep her Alaska Native language alive for years. Chifluk and I take a look at Bristol Bay Online in her office, where she works as Director of Natural Resources for the Bristol Bay Native Association.
If you just wave your cursor over the dots, it'll bring them up.
As she clicks around on the site, Chifluk picks out Lake Aleknagik on the outskirts of Dillingham, her hometown.
I'm from Aleknagik. The way we pronounce it is Aleknagik. And the root word for this term means a wrong way. And I think it's because of the two rivers, the Wood River and the Nooshigak. And people that weren't familiar may have taken the Wood River instead of the Nooshigak and vice versa. And ended up at Aleknagik.
And so they said, oh, if you end up here, it's the wrong way.
It's the wrong way, yeah.
What about Dillingham? Can you try clicking on Dillingham and see if it says the original name?
It's Dillingham.
Let's try it. What's the native name? Can you pronounce it for Dillingham?
People call it Choyung. And the reason why people gave it that term is because right there where the Wood River and the Nooshigak meet down here below Dillingham is where it really churns and gets really muddy. And that's what the root word for Choyung refers to, is that the churning and the mud in the bay here.
Chifluk is a walking, talking version of Bristol Bay Online. Preserving Yupik language, place names or otherwise, is important to her because it links her to her culture.
I'm bilingual. I speak Yupik. Even though English is my second language, I prefer my native language because I'm able to express myself better.
The website is trying to take the wisdom of people like her and preserve it for future generations. Gary Holton is an associate professor of linguistics in the Alaska Native Language Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The situation for all 19 Alaska Native languages, Holton says they're all endangered.
Endangered means there is significant threat of the language ceasing to have any native speakers within the next generation.
And the descriptive phrases used in place names, Holton says, are key to keeping a language alive.
When we talk about language shift, it's not the phrases like, what are we going to eat, or where are you going, that disappear first. It's the most esoteric knowledge that disappears first. Things like locations of places. These are the things that will be irretrievable.
The people who started Bristol Bay Online say they hope it will become a resource for native language teachers and the next generation of speakers. Professor Holton with UAF says the database behind Bristol Bay Online is one step towards saving Alaska's endangered languages and perhaps the eventual recognition of native place names.
Yeah, I can envision a day where Alaska is more like Hawaii in the sense of having a greater awareness of native language and native place names. Now we see things like the Dena'ina Center. So we could envision a day where you fly into Dillingham and the airport name is not only in English, but also in Yupik.
Chaitlik says that would be music to her ears.
In Joryung, Jo.
It's more J, huh?
Yeah, Jo.
In Joryung.
Mm-hmm. Right there.
I'm Daisha Eaton.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A new Discovery Channel program that is scheduled to premiere tonight will apparently include video footage that some claim is a sea monster. Reportedly, the footage was shot in Bristol Bay. KDLG's Mike Mason has more.
The show Hillstranded will debut tonight on the Discovery Channel. It features John and Andy Hillstrand, who are well-known crab fishermen who rose to fame through the Discovery Channel program The Deadliest Catch. Andy acts as the show's host. The show chronicles the search for a sea monster in Alaska, and tonight's program is scheduled to include video footage shot by a fisherman in 2009 of something that has come to be known as Alaska's Loch Ness Monster. Apparently, the footage was taken in Nushagak Bay, and some claim what's in the video footage is a Cadborosaurus. Discovery News claims it's a type of reptile or lizard that got its name from Cadboro Bay in British Columbia. One of the men featured in tonight's episode is Paul LeBlond, who's the former head of the Department of Earth and Ocean Sciences at the University of British Columbia. He says the Cadborosaurus lived about 50 million years ago.
They haven't been seen for a long, long time, but people speculate that they might have survived or that they might have descendants.
The different accounts of the sightings of the sea monster generally describe it as having a long neck, a horse-like head, and bumps on the creature's back that stick out of the water. LeBlond is the co-author of the book Cadborosaurus, Survivor from the Deep. Tonight's show will include the video footage and the reactions of the Hillstrand brothers, including Andy.
Right there.
Yeah.
See that?
Yeah.
This is what sold me is when I saw the head come up and I saw it blow out from behind his head.
Right there.
If you would like to see the video footage for yourself, the one-hour special is scheduled to air tonight at 9 on the Discovery Channel. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you miss any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Daisha Eaton and Mike Mason in Dillingham, and Ben Stanton in Kenai. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.